What is your main takeaway from being in these classified briefings in relation to unidentified aerial phenomena or UFOs?
I think one of the interesting and perhaps frustrating thing is, so you have SAPs or special access projects, right? And so everything's very compartmentalized, and that's for good reason, national security reasons, purposes, for whatever. But the problem is that makes getting information like this hard to gather, because you've got to look under the right rock and ask the right question. And so you could be looking under the right rock for information. There could be information there, but if you're not asking the right question, they are not necessarily going to divulge it. So it requires a very methodical, consistent, persistent, doggish, bulldogish, if you will, kind of determination to get the truth. You know, you're borrowing from the X-Files. The truth is out there. We just got to figure out where to look and how to get it.
What would you say that your current understanding of UAP are in relation to how would you best define them?
Well, I mean, therein lies the question, right? And so for me, and my perspective is national security. So we do know that we have these UAPs operating in a commercial light area zones. So that would be, let me back up a step. So if you have experimental aircraft that maybe it's a joint venture between a branch of the military and some private corporation, they have testing areas. There's protocols that they would follow to, one, to keep the information secret, but also for the safety of the general public. What we're seeing is these UAPs operating in areas of military traffic, around military bases and nuclear facilities, but also in commercial lanes of traffic. So, you know, let's assume for a moment, hypothetically, that it is some sort of joint venture, right? So why are these craft operating outside of their area, their test areas? Why would they be in those specific, again, commercial or military flight zones? And what's the risk to the public? Where's the oversight? Where's the accountability? And then if perhaps it's not a joint venture, then who is it? What is it? Is it China? Is it Russia? Is it a joint venture between the two? That would be unlikely. But again, you know, when you're asking these questions, I think you got to be careful not to come to a predetermined conclusion and then try to prove your conclusion, right? You go into it eyes wide open. You ask all the probative questions, even the questions that may seem ridiculous, right? And then you disprove or prove that hypothesis. And so that's my approach to it. You know, I'm not going to assume I know what it may or may not be. What I do know is there's a national security issue here, and it needs to be determined, is it a national security threat as we move forward?
What would you say currently you feel is the highest fidelity pathway of explanation? Is it likely to be a breakaway rogue aerospace defense group? Is it a foreign adversary? Is it something that perhaps warrants a more exotic explanation? What would you personally lean towards when it comes to the more difficult to explain cases and perhaps things that you've been exposed to in more private, closed briefings?
Yeah, you know, I guess if we were kind of on a very personal level, you know, my hope would be is that it's some new technology that we possess, and because that puts us that next generation above our adversaries, and so again, you know, you've seen these leaps in technology over the years, and one of the main reasons why United States of America is the dominant predator on the battlefield is our ability to communicate across distances and complicated areas, but also our air superiority. And so to have that next level technology that maintains that superiority would be obviously crucial as we go forward, as China becomes more and more of an emerging threat. But that being said, you know, these UAPs seem to defy physics. They seem to have some sort of propulsion technology that's unknown to man as we understand it. So what does that do to the energy sector? If there's a new think about the amount of energy it takes to take a craft that's hovering and suddenly it's going Mach 1 in a matter of seconds. One, the human body can't sustain that as we understand it, right? So the craft could have to have next level technology to protect a tissue, if you will, or it's an unmanned type of craft. So again, there's just a lot of questions that have to be probed. But again, you know, if there is this propulsion technology out there and this energy capability out there, not only are we in a renaissance when it comes to aircraft, but we're in a renaissance in terms of propulsion and energy production and consumption. So again, huge implications across the economic scale, both domestically and internationally.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of the people who've been researching this particular subject for a long time prior to the recent destigmatization of the subject in the last few years would say that the Department of Energy, or previously the Atomic Energy Commission, is one of the higher level agencies of interest, is probably the best way to put it.
That's right.
Have you personally followed a pathway towards the DOE and its implications towards this subject?
Yeah, so I've specifically asked in committee about the DOE because, again, if you're going to house a top secret next level technology, what better place to have it and house it than some of the most secure facilities in the world, right? Your nuclear facilities. Everybody knows about Area 51. It's a testing area, but they're in Oak Ridge in Tennessee. You've got this super top secret, super secure facility that, again, would be ideal to have and to house some new technology, emerging technology, that one that we want to fully master for ourselves and quite frankly control. Because, again, you know, as you look at that next generation of warfare, it's not just, you know, tanks and planes. It's drones. It's unmanned aircraft. It's economic, right? And so there's a lot that's about to happen as we go forward as a superpower and our competitive edge on the global stage. And so for me, I always go back to national security, national security, national security. Is it us? Is it them? Is it little green men? I can't tell you. I can't answer those questions, but we need to get to that answer.
Do you think that you'll be permitted to get to that answer and allow the public to have that answer?
Well, you know, I think myself, and, you know, you mentioned before, you know, this has become somewhat destigmatized. And so I think there is an opportunity to push forward and try to seek answers. It doesn't mean that we're going to get them. You know, I think so. I think the next question would be, so where do we go from here? I think, you know, I would ask the speaker to set up a select committee that is specific to UAPs, whose charge it is and authority it is, and perhaps even subpoena power to figure out what are the answers to these questions. And so in that, you have a mission statement, you have a directive of what are we trying to get out of this? What answers do we need to have from a congressional oversight perspective and maybe an intel committee perspective? And then what do we need to get out there for the American people? So I think the next, if you're really going to get to the bottom of this, it would be a select committee set up by the Speaker of the House, who quite frankly could do it with a stroke of a pen.
Someone that I've spoken to at length on record is Congressman Burchett, and he said that he got the impression from the SCIF briefing, from the classified briefing, that at the very least, it certainly seemed to solidify the opinion of people that were present that David Grush and his testimony should be taken seriously. And he said that he kind of got the feeling that people that were maybe on the fence are no longer on the fence. And I'd like to get your opinion on David Grush, his testimony, and whether or not you feel it's accurate. Have you seen information that bolsters his testimony?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've had from several credible sources that David Grush is on the up and up. And so that gives you a baseline. And so from there, what you do is you take his testimony at face value, and then you look at it from a very critical perspective. So you're, again, you don't want to take that testimony and try to prove your analysis or your outcome, right? So you try to prove or disprove every aspect of his testimony. And even if you assume for a moment that, you know, maybe there was some evidence out there that maybe questioned his credibility, I still think you take that testimony at face value and you use that as a guideline to figure out, all right, based off of this testimony, these are some probative questions that we should be asking. Where do we go to get the answers if you assume for a moment that there's credibility there? So I think it's less an issue. And you see this, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, whistleblowers, someone immediately jumps out there and tries to discredit you, right? Someone with an opposing opinion or someone just with an opinion who wants to have an opinion. And so I don't listen to the noise. I look at the testimony. I come up with questions, I seek answers. And again, I think it's important that you go into this with eyes wide open, because if you don't, you're liable to not see something that's right in front of you because you've got blinders on.
Do you feel like the internal temperature within Congress, within the Senate, the people you're speaking to, different committees, would you say that the appetite for transparency on this particular issue is high enough, or is it lacking?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those, issues that it doesn't necessarily take the body of Congress to have an overwhelming sense of action needs to be taken. I mean, it's literally at the will of the speaker. So you have a core group of individuals, myself included, Republicans and Democrats. So it's bipartisan. It's bicameral. You've had U.S. senators take an interest and make public statements regarding UAPs. And so I think there's a real opportunity, whether there's, you know, five of us or 105 of us, to move forward with some sort of a select committee. And look, if we hit a dead end, if we come to an answer and it's not the answer we like, at least we did our due diligence as members of Congress. And again, for me, it's all about national security. In Middle Tennessee, we have Oak Ridge. We have a nuclear laboratory. I want to make sure that that place is secure, right? Yeah. I have children. I have a family. I have relatives. I have a community. I want to make sure that there's nothing that, whether it's China or Russia or some hybrid project, whatever, is jeopardizing commercial and military lanes of traffic over my state. And you go back to the weather balloon, quote unquote, the China spy balloon, you notice that it came down and it crossed Tennessee. Well, it threaded the needle between a military base, Oak Ridge, and an Air Force base. And so, again, that was intentional. So, again, there's a national security component to this. And regardless of the origins of these UAPs, we need answers. We need accountability. We need oversight. I think we need a mechanism by which that's clear, more transparent for these pilots to report. And quite frankly, to protect them from the reprisals, whether it be from their employer or the government, if they report something, to this clearinghouse. And again, it should certainly filter to Congress and or a select committee so that we have eyes on it and it can't be filtered away from us.
I suppose there's always the chance of, a kind of strategic multidimensional chess being played. But don't you think that if China had this technology, they wouldn't be relying on these balloons?
Right. I would concur, and I think what we've seen with, their military apparatus as it is, they're ramping up, they're playing catch up. But again, it's important that we not jump to any assumption. You've got to be cautious and careful not to assume that we know or don't know. It should also be noted, when you go back to our spy plane that we were flying in the late 60s and early 70s, we assumed that Russia couldn't see it. And then it turned out when they shot it down that they could see it. And so Russia did not signal to us that they could see our capabilities, right? That what they did was is they saw a problem and they worked on a solution to take one of those things down. And again, it wasn't until they shot it down and we had the loss of that military piece of equipment that we recognized their capability. So you always have to be careful not to make an assumption in something like this, because if you make that assumption and you're wrong, it can be catastrophic.
Although you do have to also take into account just historical context, because some of the capabilities have been on display for a very long time. And so are you quite confident alongside people like Congressman Bushett that there has been a multi-decade cover-up?
Well, I mean, I think there's clearly been some compartmentalization that's taken place because of these SAPs and CAPs, and whether it's intentional or unintentional to be determined. But what I can tell you, it's hard to get information. Part of that is because of, that you're talking about national security issues. You have these agencies and or departments that are protecting their fiefdom, and it just is what it is. And so, again, I don't want to assign a nefarious kind of reason for us not having this information. What I can tell you is you've got a group of individuals determined to find it, and so we're going to push forward.
Would you say that you've seen sufficient evidence to suggest that some of these unacknowledged special access programs, these SAPs and CAPs and USAPs and WUSAPs, it's a whole alphabet soup. But have you had any inclinations other than just David Grush and his public testimony regarding reverse engineering, the acquisition of materials, any of this type of more exotic propositions?
Yeah, I'll just say, it's probably premature to comment on anything like that, especially as it pertains to a SAP, because that would be classified information. But that being said, those are the kind of questions that have to be asked, right? So for example, we've talked about, over time, you've seen these leaps in technology. Where did the technology come from? Was it our own genesis, our own creation, or is it something that was recovered, as Grush has testified to, that we've recovered aircraft, and thus there is, or presumably, some reverse engineering that has taken place. So again, what's caused and made that leap capable? So, and of course, we're going into this next generation with AI and the capabilities that brings, scary capabilities, quite frankly, that brings to the global scape. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, scary capabilities, definitely. I'm very interested in AI and have some interviewed quite a few people on the kind of cutting edge of AI. I kind of get the feeling that it might be able to assist in a bit of transparency on this issue in terms of, like, you know, sensor fusion and new forms of analysis and technological integration, being able to pick up these things and maybe even assessing historical data. Do you think that AI might be able to help us gain a bit more transparency?
You know, I think there's certainly an application there. But, you know, there's also a cautionary tale. You know, one of the problems we have in Congress is that it you know, I liken it to the Titanic. It's a big ship. It turns slowly. And I think AI is advancing at a pace that is much more rapid than Congress. And as we move forward, we've got to put some guardrails. You know, there was a movie where Skynet went live, and I want to make sure that that doesn't happen, right, in the Terminator movies. And not that we're heading down that path. But again, it's one of those, let's be cautious as we move forward, because there are some, again, when you look at the pharmaceutical space, when you look at Alzheimer's research, when you look at some of the applications where AI is being used, it's amazing and it's fascinating, and it gives people hope for that are in those situations. But it also could be weaponized against you, against me, against the general public. We need to be cautious.
I'm glad to hear that you're aware of those types of ethical guidelines and parameters for AI, and would definitely encourage more congressional insight onto that type of issue, because, like you said, they're lacking. It's advancing very quickly. In relation to the UAP subject and any sort of large disclosures, do you think that people are more ready for those types of things than they were in the past?
Yeah, I would think so. We are inundated with information, that 24-hour news cycle. So I think people have greater access to some of this information. You've seen now a 40-50-year history of members of Congress and pilots mentioning this type of technology. I grew up in the generation where, kind of post-Star Trek, but at the dawn of Star Wars. And so this idea that there are other worlds and or other beings has really been part of our culture now since, again, going back to the 60s, right? And so I think there is probably I think we're probably better prepared if that is the new reality as we go forward. And again, if that is the reality, that's one of those, there's a national security component to that. Are they our friend? Are they someone else's friend, right? Or do they have good intentions or hostile intentions? Now, I tend to lend more towards this is our own capability. This is our own technology. I do have those probative questions of how did we get here? Like, how did we advance so rapidly without any really, there's nothing that I can think of when you look at the aerodynamics and the propulsion and the energy required that's in the marketplace that even would remotely hint at something like this. But again, that's why my hope would be is that we get some sort of select committee, that we have the opportunity to do field hearings, that we can continue to legitimize the questions that are being asked so that we can have more whistleblowers come forward and that kind of thing. Because again, that's where it's really going to happen. When you look at the breaks in cases, and regardless of what you think about Hunter Biden or Russia or whatever, it's when whistleblowers are coming forward, providing the information that you might not otherwise get. I think that's the next step in this phase as we look for the truth.
Do you feel like these classified briefings are changing the way that maybe you might perceive this type of secrecy? Like, do you feel like it's warranted, the classification levels to some of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, there's a reason why you have special access programs. There's a reason why you compartmentalize information for national security. But now we have a new dynamic, or you have a UAP operating in civilian areas or military areas that warrants questions, that warrants accountability, that warrants oversight. And so, absent that, maybe this is a different conversation, 10 years ago or whatever, but it's now becoming, it would appear, a regular circumstance. Like, there's even been in the last 72 hours, there was a pilot that reported seeing something, and there was something filmed in Ukraine. Don't know what those are. That hasn't been, there's nothing conclusive yet, but again, it's becoming more common, and we need to start asking those serious questions. I go into this eyes wide open. And I think there's a curiosity. There's a curiosity that you have. There's a curiosity that I have, regardless of where we are on that spectrum of what is it or what is it not. And I think, again, I keep going back to Oak Ridge. I keep going back to those nuclear facilities. I want to make sure they're safe, right? Whatever it is, I want to make sure they're safe. And you want to make sure that they're safe. And so that's what we're pursuing, is the truth.